What I want to talk about is written there. So I want to talk about how you can construct topological conformal field theories on some kind of purely algebraic thing, which is a Calabi-Yau A-infinity category. And the point of this is to construct part of the B model of mirror symmetry from, categories of coherent sheaves, and also to construct part of the Gromov-Witten theory of a symplectic manifold from the Fekir category. So I'll be spending about half the talk explaining what topological conformal field theories are and how they arise in geometry, and then I'll get on to the proof. So people are probably very familiar with Graham Segal's definition of conformal field theory. So that there's a category of Riemann surfaces, M, whose objects are the finite sets, and whose morphisms are Riemann surfaces with boundary. So this guy in the picture is a morphism from the set with three objects there to the set with two objects. This is a symmetric monoidal category, which means that there's a notion of tensor product, which on objects is given by disjoint union of finite sets, and on morphism is given by disjoint union of surfaces. So composition in this category is kind of obvious. We take all the outgoing boundaries of one surface and glue them to the incoming boundaries of another. Yeah? Oh, these are Riemann surfaces with they have a complex structure and parameterized boundary, yeah. So Graham defined conformal field theory to be a tensor functor from this category to the category of vector spaces, right? So unraveling that definition a little bit, you see that what it involves is for each object of the category, so the finite set, we have a vector space. The statement that it's a tensor functor means that there's a little bit of extra structure relating the tensor product on the category M, which is given by disjoint union here, and the tensor product in the category of vector spaces, which is the usual tensor product. So this consists of morphisms from phi I tensor phi j to phi I union j. People often assume that these are isomorphisms, but we lack this condition a little bit. the rest of the structure of conformal field theory is given by for each Riemann surface in the moduli space of surfaces with I incoming and J outgoing boundary, we get a morphism between these vector spaces, which is compatible with composition in the obvious sense. And one last axiom, the diagram commutes, which just says disjoint union of Riemann surfaces corresponds to tensor product of morphisms in an appropriate sense. Well, a particularly simple example of conformal field theory is called topological field theory. In this case, the operations phi sigma for the Riemann surface sigma are independent of the conformal structure. So it's just only depends on the sigma as a topological space. This structure turns out to be very simple. We The topology of modular spaces of curves plays no role here at all. And, well, a topological field theory is essentially a Frobenius algebra. This is an old result of Siegel. But somehow, topological field theory is kind of, it seems quite unnatural, right? Because we're taking constant functions, or locally constant functions on moduli space. Right, but the sheaf of locally constant functions it's a sheaf with higher cohomology, so we're truncating some kind of more natural structure. And the more natural structure is something which occurs quite often in geometry, is called topological conformal field theory. So it's the derived analog of topological field theory, if you like. So to define this, our spaces phi I for finite sets I are now complexes, and each surface, as before, gives us an operation like this, which it's a map of complexes, so it commutes with the differential. Whereas in topological field theory, this operation would be independent of the surface, what we see here is that it's independent of the surface, but only up to homotopy, right? So if sigma 1 and sigma 2 are connected by a path in the moduli space, say a path alpha, then the operations corresponding to them will be connected by a chain homotopy, phi of alpha, which just means this equation holds. So it's like a topological field theory up to homotopy. But there's also, these homotopies will be controlled by higher homotopies and so on. So that any n parameter family of surfaces, alpha, which we can think of as a singular n simplex in moduli space, gives us an operation, phi of alpha, which is compatible with the differential in this sense. Right, so this is the definition of topological conformal field theory. But it's nice to rephrase this as a functor from a certain category. So we define a category C, which has the same objects as this category of Riemann surfaces, so the objects of C are finite sets. But whereas the morphisms in M were the moduli spaces of Riemann surfaces with some incoming and outgoing boundary, the morphisms in C will be the singular chain complex of this topological space. Right, so for finite sets I and J, we define Cij to be singular chains on Mij. So the categorical structure on M, given by Lewing Riemann surfaces, descends to make C into a category. It's a symmetric monoidal category, because we can take disjoint unions of Riemann surfaces, and it has a differential. So the differential graded symmetric monoidal category. And then we just define a topological conformal field theory. By definition, is a tensor functor from C to complexes, which is compatible with the differential in this sense, meaning that for each morphism alpha, phi of d alpha is given by bracketing with the differential on the complexes. So I suppose we should unravel this definition just a little bit. For each finite set, we have a complex. we have maps like this. Relating the tensor product structure in C and the tensor product structure in the category of complexes, it's kind of convenient to impose the extra technical condition that these maps are all quasi-isomorphisms. And if you like, you can assume they're isomorphisms, but it's not a huge difference. So each singular chain alpha in the moduli space of Riemann surfaces gives us a map of these between these complexes, and we have the same compatibility conditions as we had before. It's compatible with composition and compatible with the differential, compatible with the monoidal structure. So what I want to be talking about is algebraic constructions of these things. But there's already a geometric counterpart, at least if you believe in chain level Gromov-Witten theory, that such a structure would be given by chain level Gromov-Witten theory.
Is there a way to define this in terms of
you can use any chain model for moduli space you like. So I suppose take some group chains and maps the mapping class groups, that should do it, yeah. So there's a few technical points about this definition. The first one is just this point. I mean, the definition, there's many different chain models for the moduli of Riemann surfaces, and many different ways of looking at it. And we would like things to be independent of choices, and it turns out that the category of TCFTs is independent of any choices, at least up to an appropriate notion of homotopy. A slightly more interesting technical point is as follows. Instead of working with singular chains, if we're trying to construct a d-dimensional theory, we should be working with chains with local coefficients. Coefficients in this flat line bundle, which is just the determinant of the cohomology of the universal surface with a shift by the Euler characteristic. So what I mean by dimension is, in the A model, this will just be the complex dimension of the manifold of your variety. Similarly, in the B model, in a kind of more abstract algebraic situation, the dimension will correspond to the degree of the trace on the Frobenius algebra. You could take this for granted now if you like, but you can see it gives you a shift which can be made to correspond with the grading of Gromov-Witten invariants in the Calabi-Yau case. But you'll see this later in the open-close case, why we need to do this. Anyway, so when D is 3, this is kind of important because we find the dualizing sheaf of the moduli space. So chains with coefficients in this are really... can be identified as the co-chains of the moduli space, which we should. Yeah. So that this observation is, of course, related to the observation that on the Calabi-Yau threefold, the moduli spaces of stable maps are all dimension zero. We want to be constructing these TCFTs, right? And there's kind of various different notions. Each different D will give you a slightly different notion of, and the essentially the only difference is the grading. But it turns out that we will construct these from a kind of algebraic situation, and then the D will play a natural role there. So, yeah. No, it's dictated by the algebra. So, in, or for example, the Fourier category of a like manifold of dimension 2D, that's what D has to be. No, it didn't, but this is like...
The stuff is the zero-dimensional case.
Yes.
And this is the general case. Fix D, and the answer to the question before is definition. D is called the dimension of the zero.
Yes, well said. Yeah.
Yeah, topological central charge. Yeah, of the topological zero. Yeah.
Okay. This is closed TCFT, but we're going to be interested in open and open closed, and eventually constructing closed things from open. So we need the definition of open TCFT. So I'm sure we can get this blue thing off. In the open case, in order to define it, we want an analogous category to Graham's category for the open case. But to define this, we need to fix from the beginning a set of D brains, which just has no structure. It's just a set. And in analogy with the closed case we had before, we have a Riemann surface with open boundary, is something given by a picture like this, right? So on some of the boundaries, there's embedded intervals. So these little raised pieces are the open boundaries. And as you can see, they can be either incoming, like this one, or outgoing, like this one. And in between the open boundaries, there's these kind of curly pieces, we have the free boundaries. And each free boundary must be labeled by a G-brain, like in this picture. So lambda 1, lambda 2 and lambda 3 are the D brains. And as you can see, each open boundary, we have associated a pair of D brains given by where it starts and where it ends. So Riemann surfaces like this will again form a category. So let me explain that. How am I for time, by the way?
You've used
18 minutes. Okay. Yeah. Actually, that should probably be M, I think, not S. So we want to define a category, which is the open analog of Graham's category. But now the objects are not just finite sets, but they have this bit of extra structure. Namely, each object has a source and target map to the set of D brains. And the morphisms are the diagrams we saw on the previous page. So a morphism is a Riemann surface with open boundary, free boundaries labeled by D brains. Now, to each open boundary, as I said, there's a pair of associated D brains, one where it starts and where it ends. So each Riemann surface with open boundary like this, there's associated two objects. That given by all the incoming open boundaries, and that given by all of the outgoing open boundaries. So these Riemann surfaces, they form the morphisms in a category. And the composition is given by gluing the open boundaries together. So here's a picture. Of the composition, two Riemann surfaces. These lambdas are these D brain labels. Straight pieces are the open boundaries, and This is an outgoing open boundary, which we glue to this incoming open boundary of the other surface to get this guy. Okay, so this kind of picture is probably much less familiar than the usual closed conformal field theory. So, is anyone have any questions about it, or? Yeah. Yeah, it's just a it's to be thought of as kind of morphisms between the two brains on either side of it. Yes, yeah. So that's just a statement that, you know, the morphisms are composable, right? You know? This Riemann surface is a map from something to the object with one open boundary and these two D-brains.
Right.
It's because the objects had labels by D-brains as well in the category.
So what if the object is
No, it may have some open boundary. In this picture it kind of does, but in general, I mean, it's possible to have a free boundary which doesn't have any open intervals on it at all, right? So, actually, one thing to note is that the free boundaries just don't interact at all. We never glue them or anything. They just kind of float around.
For example, it could be possible to have a hole which isn't labeled, but any part of it isn't labeled by D-brain.
No, if you have a hole, it has to be labeled by a D-brain. Or, yeah. Okay. We kind of want to mimic our definition earlier on of what topological conformal field theory is. So we just do exactly the same thing. Here we have a category. It's in fact a symmetric monoidal category whose morphisms are topological spaces. And we define an associated category of singular chains, and we'll define TCFT to be a functor from this category of singular chains. So we define O of lambda to be chains, well, M on the previous slide was S. O of lambda to be chains on this category. So the objects of O of lambda are the same as before, but the morphisms are singular chains on moduli of Riemann surfaces. And an open TCFT, we define it to be a tensor functor from this to complexes. And as before, an open TCFT of dimension D is defined to be a tensor functor from singular chains with coefficients in this local system to complexes. So let's
take ordinary cohomology as the surface, not say cohomology in contrast
to cohomology. Oh, just ordinary cohomology. We should try and make some sense of this definition, unravel the terminology. So a pair of D-brains defines an object, right? Given with one open boundary and one open boundary between these two D-brains, if you like. So if phi is an open TCFT, then applying phi to this object given by these two D-brains gives us a complex. We should think of as the complex of morphisms between these two guys. So these D-brains will eventually be something like a category, and these things will be something like morphisms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which ones are on which
threshold? I don't really know what you mean, but I... Maybe you should...
I think so. Maybe I have to run each of these. So you have a Riemann surface with boundary, but your boundary is that parts which are called free and parts which are labeled by...
Yeah.
...by
brain. Yeah.
So I mean,
like that.
Okay, but so I could have a Riemann surface with just sort of boundary forgetting which ones are free or not free, a bunch of circles, and then on each circle, some parts are free and some parts are some aren't. So it seems like that's more data than just a collection of pairs.
I'm not sure. I mean, let me kind of draw. This might be like a typical boundary component of your surface, right? This is sigma here. And, thanks. So, the object of our category of lambda might be, for example, the set with two elements, 1, 2, and the map to lambda squared, which takes S of 1 to be lambda, T of 1 to be mu, S of 2 to be mu, T of 2 to be lambda, for example. I mean, this is an object of a category of lambda, and this Riemann surface will define a morphism from this object to something else. Am I kind of making some sense?
If you have small things, like moments, how do you know which of the operand things look about the same even to the boundary?
Well, the Riemann surface, when you say Riemann surface, you mean that the bits of its boundary are themselves labeled by...
Yes, maybe that's the point.
The Riemann system is labeled with it.
Thank you.
So its boundary is divided, it's literally divided.
Well,
they're both labeled by lambda.
Well, that's fine as well. Right? I mean,
when you require that the divisor of each pair of difference defines an object, is it defined uniquely or defined?
So if things are not making sense, right? Say there's only one D brain, and this just makes things much easier. And right? I don't understand your question. I mean. No, the objects of all lambda are these kind of combinatorial things, whereas the morphisms are the Riemann surfaces, are the chains on moduli of Riemann surfaces. So the objects are like the possible labels for the boundary of the Riemann surface. They're just a set with no structure. It's purely abstract. Our open TCFT has the same kind of structure we had before. So for each object O of our category, which is a finite set labeled by D-brains in this way, we have a complex, we have tensor product maps like this, and we impose the same technical condition that these are quasi-isomorphisms. And if you like, you can assume they're isomorphisms. This kind of, you know, it's not correct, but it makes things a bit simpler. And, you know, just as before, each Riemann surface with boundary labeled by D-bounds gives a morphism, right? So let me just reiterate that the object of our category are the possible labels on the boundaries of Riemann surface, of our Riemann surfaces with open boundary, whereas the morphisms are the Riemann surfaces themselves, or rather n parameter families of them. And there's various kind of more or less straightforward compatibility conditions, completely analogous to the ones we saw earlier on. So just as kind of a warm-up, or maybe which maybe make things a bit clearer, we'll see that after passing through homology, we find we have a category. Right. So after passing through homology, I mean taking homology of spaces and morphisms and homology of moduli of Riemann surfaces instead of singular chains, we find in particular a category whose objects are the D-bounds, whose morphisms are these homology of our things, whatever, and the composition is given by the zero-dimensional homology class in this moduli of Riemann surfaces. Right, so here we have two incoming open boundaries, one outgoing open boundaries, and these are the D-bound labels, and such a surface takes in an F, which is a map from lambda 1 to lambda 2, a G, which is a map from lambda 2 to lambda 3, and spits out a map from lambda 1 to lambda 3, which is G composed with F. And the fact that this defines a category is kind of, it's pretty clear, actually. It's these two Riemann surfaces, well, there's zero chains in moduli space, they're homologous. So on homology, they get the same operation, which just says H composed with G composed with F, you know, it's unambiguous. But there isn't, right? Well, I don't think there is a symmetry interchanging F and G. I mean, Yes. That's a complex structure, right? Yeah. How much for time is it? So we've nearly got through kind of list of definitions we want to talk about and get onto something concrete. So one more definition is kind of what? Putting the last two definitions together of open conformal field theory and closed, there's a very straightforward generalization to open closed. So a Riemann surface with open closed boundary is something which appears in this picture. These are closed incoming, closed outgoing, and these kind of straight bits, as before, are open. These are free, and we have D-bounds labels as before. So these, putting together the two discussions we had, these Riemann surfaces form are morphisms in a category whose objects are the kind of possible labels on the boundary of the surface. So we would like to take singular chains on the moduli space as our morphisms, and we call this category OC lambda. And we declare an open-closed TCFT to be a tensor function from base to complexes. Okay, is that reasonably clear? So as I said at the beginning, the kind of aim is, well, one of the aims is to actually construct some of these things. So, well, kind of state the theorem, which allows us to do this. Firstly, well, open PCFTs are essentially Calabi-Yau A-infinity categories. And I'll explain these terms a bit more in a little bit. So, in particular, we can construct open PCFTs algebraically. The second part is that, in an appropriate sense, homotopy sense, there is a universal open-closed PCFT for each open. And this is just purely formal, but the actual content of the result is that the homology of this universal thing is the Hochschild homology of the category. So in particular, given some Calabi-Yau infinity category, we take our universal open-closed TCFT, we take the closed part, and we find by this construction, you know, a closed TCFT on the Hochschild homology, or something quasi-isomorphic to the Hochschild chain complex. Yeah, let me explain that. That's the page. Yeah. Well, the Calabi-Yau condition, that's just the categorical generalization of Frobenius algebra, right? So a Calabi-Yau category with one object is the same as a Frobenius algebra. And I should say here, is something I forgot to write on this slide, is that in a Frobenius algebra, there's a trace map which has a certain dimension, a degree, and that's the dimension of the theory. So here, there's a map from home A to C of some degree, which will be the dimension of the theory. A infinity, well, you know what that means. It's associative up to homotopy, but we also impose the cyclic condition you see in the Foucaultian category. Is imposed. What does it mean that there's a homotopy equivalence of categories? Well, it's some kind of a concrete thing, right? Each open TCFT we get a category, and conversely, and these constructions are inverse to each other, up to quasi-isomorphism. And, well, there's one more thing. Extended is just some technical condition which you can ignore. So they're called Calabi-Yau categories for a reason, and the reason is as follows. If we have a projective Calabi-Yau, then its derived category is a Calabi-Yau category, and the morphisms are given by the direct sum of the X groups, so it's graded vector space, and the fair pairing induces a duality between home AB and home BA, which is of degree D, so it's a category of dimension D, and this is like the Calabi-Yau structure, actually. Now, we could kind of naively hope, but Andrea Calderaro just told me this is false, that this is true. So what we should really be doing here, we shouldn't really be using derived category. We're kind of losing too much information when we pass through homology. We should be working with some kind of DG version of the derived category. But unfortunately, I currently don't know of a good model with a sufficiently strong Calabi-Yau structure on it. I'm not sure. Maybe.
Oh, I see. So from the derived, you get an A-infinity structure. But if you just have the derived category.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe having massive products in the derived category, you could do this. But.
I mean, I couldn't make comments at this point that there is a appropriate for a Trinity category, it sounds like eventually that should be part of the definition of the Trinity category.
That's probably true.
But
I'm actually not sure that's necessary because, you know, whatever the kind of correct definition we want, it will be an open TCFT, and we've already seen open TCFTs are the same as Calabi-Yau categories, right? So if we impose, if we use a weaker notion, we could always probably find something equivalent to it, which has a stronger notion. Okay, so the kind of naive hope, which is false, is that the Hochschild homology of the drive category satisfies this equation. It's essentially the cohomology of X with some funny grading. Now, this is actually true if we use a DG model, but I think it's false for the drive category. But anyway, so let's suppose we had a nice DG model. And then the TCFT structure we constructed earlier on will induce for us operations. The homology of moduli space of curves will give an operation between tensor products of the Hochschild homology groups like this. Right. And these should be B model mirror to the corresponding operations on ordinary homology of the symplectic manifold, which is the mirror. And these operations here are given geometrically by Grobov-Witten type invariants. We integrate over moduli spaces of pseudo-holomorphic maps. So this is what I meant when I said we want to construct part of the B model. So as you can see, we haven't yet constructed everything because we haven't got bar. I mean that's another subject. But this is the TCFT part of the B model. Maybe skip this one. Okay, so I'm going to talk a bit about the proof at the end, but I want to work out some more corollaries to do with the Fukaya category. So there should be, you know, TCFTs, they should be constructed geometrically. Right. Well, X is compact, and the Fukaya category is an open TCFT, more or less. Well, at least, you know, it's an open TCFT, but the tree-level part dealing with disks, but it turns out that's enough to see everything else. The D-brains in this would be the, well, graded Lagrangians with many extra conditions and extra structure and so on, which I don't really understand. Kind of the morphisms between the D-brains will be the Fleur chain complex of the two Lagrangians. On the closed side, if we have a compact symplectic manifold, we also have a closed TCFT, given by what's basically Grobov-Witten invariants. Right? So on the homology of X, with this shift in grading, which makes all the maps of degree zero, there are operations like this, right? Homology of moduli space mapping to homology of X. Yeah. And a homology class in moduli space gives an operation between tensor powers of homology of X, given by Grobov-Witten invariants. So it's natural to conjecture that this lifts to chain level, and so that the actual chain complex of X as a structure of TCFT. And it's kind of natural also to conjecture that there is an open-closed TCFT structure extending this open structure we've seen here on the Fukaya category and this closed structure on the chains in X. So this is some kind of chain-level theory of open-closed Grobov-Witten invariants. And of course, the construction of anything would be very difficult, but let's assume this is true for now. So we should have this coming from, you know, yeah, open close going with an invariance. So some kind of picture like this. You should do it like so. We should try and count pseudo holomorphic maps from Riemann surfaces to isomorphic manifold X. And on these boundaries, we might put, they should land in some kind of periodic orbit here. And these free boundaries will land on the Lagrangians, and the intersections of the free boundaries, which are the open things, will land, of course, on the intersections of the Lagrangians. So in this picture, you see that the open boundaries are shrunk down to points, as in the work of Sakaya, Oto, and O. And, So one point to note is that this kind of picture is a picture of what you might hope for on Fourier chains, which you might hope to exist on any synthetic manifold. But for a compact synthetic manifold, we have an isomorphism between the Fourier chains, or quasi-isomorphism, between Fourier chains and ordinary chains. So this structure, we would hope, would give us a TCFT structure, an open-closed TCFT structure on his open part was Sakai category, and his closed part was, you know, this Gromov-Witten invariance. I should say, of course, that parts of this, you know, contractual construction have been done already. So Paul Seidel has done the part dealing with H0 of moduli space, and Melissa Liu has done the part dealing with one Lagrangian. Is that right? Okay, so I want to kind of explain why this, if this construction worked, why we would be able to relate these kind of combinatorial invariants, Gromov-Witten type invariants, to the actual geometric invariants. Any questions are reasonably clear? So let's suppose X is compact and symplectic. So then Sakai category would be expected to be a unital Calabi-Yau infinity category. And so it would be an open TCFT. Now there's, as the main result I had stated, that associated to this, there's a universal closed TCFT whose homology is Hochschild homology. But the fact that it's universal would, just by definition, it's the initial element in the category of compatible open-closed TCFTs, which means there will be a map from this guy, whose homology, remember, is Hochschild homology, to the chains of X. Now, it turns out that this map should be the same as the open-closed map constructed by Seidel.
You mean homotopy?
Homotopy universal, yes. And because this is a map of open-closed TCFTs, it intertwines all of the operations coming from moduli spaces of curves, right? So even at chain level, it would intertwine them all. But passing through homology, we would find that this diagram commutes, right? So for each homology class in the moduli space of curves, well, on the one hand, it gives an operation on the homology of X, given by Gromov-Witten invariants, and this, on the other hand, it purely algebraically, it gives an operation on the Hochschild homology of the Sakai category, and this diagram would commute. So all of this is, of course, assuming the existence of open-closed Gromov-Witten invariants. So in particular, we could dualize, right? And because we get a map from the cohomology of X to the Hochschild cohomology of the Sakai category, and, one particular operation coming from the moduli space of curves is a cut product. On the geometric side, I suppose, it corresponds to the quantum cut product, whereas on the algebraic side, it gives the ordinary Hochschild cut product. So we would expect this map to be a ring homomorphism, which was talked about today, earlier on today by Chiljian, whose name I unfortunately can't pronounce. But of course, he actually did some of the hard symplectic geometry involved in proving this, right? So as Chiljian conjectured as well this morning, it's reasonable to hope that this map from the Hochschild homology of the Sakai category to the homology of X is a quasi is an isomorphism. So I think Konsevich was probably the first person to make this conjecture. Although unfortunately, there seems to be very, very little evidence for it. But kind of one way, expected from mirror symmetry, it seems to be a very important part actually of the homology of mirror symmetry conjecture. One way to think about this really is that when we dualize, we recall the deformation theory of the Sakai category is controlled by the Hochschild cohomology up here. And we have this map from the cohomology of X to Hochschild cohomology of the Sakai category. And it turns out that if this map is an isomorphism, we can show that the Lie bracket at chain level is actually zero. So that the deformation theory of the Sakai category, the formal neighborhood of the Sakai category in the space of A infinity categories, is just smooth. It's just locally isomorphic to this guy, this vector space. And we can think of this as, deformations of the symplectic form give deformations of the Sakai category, and these should be the same. Become which? I suppose maybe we should be doing some kind of extended deformation theory thing, Yes. Yeah. Tian Todorov's theorem. Yeah. And you can kind of see the degeneration of the Hodge's Drum spectral sequence here as well, which is kind of funny. I haven't tried your patience for it, but I haven't told you anything about how this main result will be proved. So if you recall, there were kind of three parts. So the first part of the main result was to show that Calabi-Yau infinity categories and open two CFTs are basically the same thing. The second part was to construct the universal open-closed two CFT, and the third part was to compute what the homology of this guy is and identify it with the Hochschild homology. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the second part. We can kind of think of this construction as a kind of a tensor product. Right. So suppose phi is an open TCFT, and we can define an open closed TCFT by, this category OC lambda is, it's like a module for this category O of lambda. Right, so we can kind of tensor across, and the definition is given by this formula. We take things spanned by, it's completely analogous to the case of the algebra case, where if we think of the functor O lambda to O C lambda as like a map of algebras, of course we can always tensor product an O lambda module to get an OC lambda module, and we just exactly the same procedure works. Time there, Roger?
More time.
Oh, good. Yeah.
5 minutes.
Really? So this is a bit dull, but I should kind of explain the kind of picture of what's going on here, right? Another way to think of this is that OC is like a bimodule, because we can multiply it by closed things here on one side and multiply by open things on the other side. So, as a familiar in algebra, we can use a bimodule to construct functors, right? So this bimodule OC will give us a functor from open TCFTs to closed. And it's given by the following picture. So suppose we have an open TCFT, and the associated closed thing will be spanned by things that look like this, right? So we take, this guy is a chain in the moduli space of Riemann surfaces with open closed boundary, with all the open on one side and all the closed on the other, and at each open we stick some morphisms between D-brains, and each free boundary we stick some D-brains. And we kind of impose some relations that says this is compatible with the open gluing. And this is some purely formal structure, but it turns out that when we do this in the kind of correct homotopy sense, we end up with the Hochschild chain complex. Which is kind of funny, right? Because we're sticking in everything about, you know, all of the complexity of the topology of moduli space, and all run, and it all collapses down to just the Hochschild chain complex. So these statements, of course, rest on some understanding of the topology of moduli space. So I'm going to talk a bit about that in the last couple of minutes. Right, so to compute this homotopy universal TCFT, all we have to know about is these spaces OC lambda AB, where B is only B has a closed part. That is, the only closed boundaries are outgoing. And we don't need to say anything at all about the closed gluing, only about the open gluing, which is much easier as it happens. So in order to prove the theorem, we'd like to give a combinatorial model for this object. And so we use all the moduli surfaces where the open boundaries are contracted to points, but we need a kind of a partial compactification of this. Right, so this was discussed earlier by Melissa Liu and also by Ezra and Sakai Odono. So we need to allow, because we can glue open boundaries together, we're kind of forced to allow nodes like this on the boundary. But this is the only type of singularity we allow. We don't allow nodes on the interior. And the result which allows us this space is kind of obviously homotopy equivalent to its interior, because we can always smooth out the nodes in a canonical way. So the key topological result then is that the locus in this moduli space, where the irreducible components are either disks or annuli, and the annuli, all of the closed boundaries must lie in annuli. Well, this locus is homotopy equivalent to everything. Right? It's got a kind of combinatorial description of the whole space. Right? So this is a slightly stronger version of Ribbon-Graph decomposition, basically. And here is a picture. It's denoted zero because it's planar. So here we have two disks glued together using open gluing to an annulus. And the statement is that when we glue things in every possible way, but only using open gluing, then we get something homotopy equivalent to the whole moduli space.
You have an annulus where...
Yes.
Oh, the dots have different meanings.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I should...
Yeah, sorry, I should forget how to use PowerPoint. So this dot here represents where the parameterization starts, right? Whereas these dots represent the open boundaries. Yeah. So how do we improve this? Well, yeah. So there's an inductive argument to show that it's sufficient to show that a moduli space of possibly singular Riemann surfaces is homotopic to its boundary. So we take some non-singular Riemann surface and we push the boundary inwards using the canonical hyperbolic metric, and eventually we find a node. This gives us a deformation retract onto the boundary. And repeating this, eventually we find everything to be built up from disks and annuli. This is kind of as far as you can go, because when we push the boundary of a disk in, we don't really change it like so. So I'm nearly finished. So I'd just like to say more words about the proof. We can extract some sort of algebraic consequences of this topological result. So when we pass it to chain level, now everything is freely generated by disks and annuli. I mean, this is kind of obvious from the picture. So this now gives us our true result. So when we look at the disk with n plus 1 moving points, as is well known, like this gives us the A infinity operation. And the fact that, well, in the purely open case, everything is built up from disks is just saying all that's going on is this A infinity structure. And there's nothing else there. So this should be thought of some kind of categorical version of the ribbon graph decomposition. Right. So here, these AIs are D-banes. These dots are open boundaries. And actually, this is the wrong slide, I think. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so this. So one of these, this guy here, is supposed to be outgoing, and the rest are incoming. So we're supposed to give a map like this. Yeah, I think this. And then we have this formula, which is the boundary of this chain in moduli space is the sum of all ways of splitting it up. Well, this is just the A infinity relation. And this is essentially Stasheff's original proof, right? Because this just is the Stasheff polytope, as Chauvin said earlier on. Now, to see the Hochschild chain complex, there's a very similar picture. So for each, well, so we call this as closed. So this kind of diagram should give us, for each, putting morphisms on here, it should give us an element of the kind of closed states. And this element will just be the tensor product of these Hom groups, which is by these are what the Hochschild chain complex is built up out of. And there's a kind of a shift in degree which comes from the dimension of the moduli space of annuli. The statement that the differential is the Hochschild differential, well, that's another kind of geometric observation, is that the only way this chain can degenerate is for points to collide like this, and disks to bubble off, so that, you know, the differential has to be the sum over all ways of applying the A infinity operations MN, which is just the Hochschild chain differential. Okay, so I think I'll stop there. Okay.
I have a quick question.
Yeah?
It's not slide 8, but it was about the derived category of the Calabi-Yau.
Yeah?
Are there, you said something about Massey products. Are there in
fact? So this is something I don't understand.
Is it the Massey product that obstructs that isomorphism between the Hochschild cosmology of the Dirac category. And,
I want to know about the Dirac morphism. Once you know the DG structure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the reason I asked the question is because, as you remarked, we can use this process, which was mentioned in one of the talks, of pushing a living structure down onto the cohomology. The whole construction can be done with the cohomology if you keep track of the whole aim of living structure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
There's also some kind of cryptic remark in Galfand-Menin about how triangulated categories intrinsically have massive products, which I've never understood. So maybe it's kind of intrinsically there if you use a structure, but...
It sounds like the technology of A is the structures will give an exact answer to that.
Yes, you're probably right.
Then you can put it into your machine.
Yeah, there's some delicate issues with the cyclic nature, but you probably... Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank
you.